everyone. I'm Gary Knoll. I'd like to welcome you into a new year and a whole lot of new information. In fact, every day, Monday to Friday, noon to 1 Eastern Standard Time, Tuesday evening, 7 to 8 on the Progressive Commentary Hour, I try to bring information that the mainstream media is either not attending to or is doing so in a very biased way. What is the truth in all issues? We always begin with the latest truth on health. And the truth is that as long as we make positive decisions in the majority of cases, we're not asking for perfection, then you should live at least in a healthy manner into your 90s, if not over 100. And I'm not talking about being completely debilitated, as we seem to think that people are going to be aging because most people don't make positive choices. You make a positive choice, eat clean, healthy food, drink clean water, exercise, do your stress management, deal with issues, and be grounded in the purpose and importance of your own life mission. Watch how much longer you live, how much better you feel. We begin our program every day with the latest on peer-reviewed literature. Every single study I share comes from the Library of Medicine, the National Library of Medicine, which is the official repository of all high-quality literature. And this comes from the University of Aben in Nigeria. And it's about lemongrass. Now, lemongrass tea, which is easily available, can help prevent memory decline. Nigerian researchers tested the ability of lemongrass to protect memory from the effects of amnesia. In this particular laboratory model, they treated the mice with water-based extracts of lemongrass and demonstrated better memories than the untreated. University supported this research, and it was published in the Journal of Herbs, Spices, and Medicinal Plants. So that's important. And they didn't use a lot. They only used 25 to 100 milligrams of lemongrass extract. And if you make some lemongrass tea in the morning, it would just be whatever's in a tea bag into a cup of hot water, let it steep for about 10 minutes. Then if you want a sweetener, stevia, you know, or coconut sugar or manuka honey, all of those are good. And then you get the benefit, right? Something good, something new. Also, one of the things we have found in almost all the anti-aging studies we've done up to this point, 5, good hydration is linked with healthier aging. Now, this is a study from the National Institute of Health, the National Heart, Lung, and Blood Institute. They say that adults who stay well hydrated are healthier, develop fewer chronic conditions, such as heart and lung diseases, and live longer than those who may not get sufficient fluids. That's according to the National Institute of Health study published in Biomedicine. And so they looked at 11,255 adults over a 30-year period. That's a long time. And they found that, well, if people are not fully and hydrated, they end up suffering from a lot of conditions. And I can tell you this, having been a long-distance marathoner for decades, doing hundreds of races, that almost no athletes that I tested in our natural living running and walking club over those decades was fully hydrated. Because when you're exercising, you have what is called insensible profuse and sensible perspiration. And when you're profusely sweating through your body, your skin, your armpits, your groin, your feet, you generally don't pay attention to it. But it's a lot of fluid, depending upon how hot it is and how long you are out there running. But just in a normal day, if people have a defect in a part of the brain creating either hydrodipsia or polydipsia, it means you need water, but your body isn't telling you to drink water. And so we need to be hydrated. So there are simple charts that tell you how much liquid you should have. Now, that would include any liquids, soups, and also smoothies and juices, as well as water. But if you want to stay healthier, then make sure that you're hydrated. And start your day, every day, with either a glass of water, 12-ounce glass of water, with the juice of one lemon in it, or a 16-ounce glass of celery juice with lemon and ginger in it. That'll help you also. Now, mind you, this is mainstream research. It also can help lower your systolic blood pressure, cholesterol, and blood sugar levels. That's also important because all those lead to cardiovascular, respiratory, metabolic, and renal and immune system dysfunction, or properly hydrated, proper function. Right? And the older you get, more likely you are not to be fully hydrated. Now, how would you know if you're fully hydrated? Simple. There is a simple scale, costs somewhere in the neighborhood of $40, and it gives your weight, but more importantly, it tells you when you stand on it, what exactly is the percentage of your body liquid, bone mass, helps you prevent osteoporosis, body mass index, which measures your body fat, and muscle. Well, those are important to know. So if you know those, then you can see if you've got the right amount, too little, or too much. From Medical University in Taiwan, ginger is found to inhibit human respiratory virus. That's important. The researchers from the Taiwanese Medical School have determined that fresh ginger is an effective treatment against the human respiratory virus, RSV. The research from the College of Medicine at the university tested fresh ginger and dry ginger against the RSV infection and that infects human liver and lung cells. The researchers found that the fresh ginger inhibited the attachment of the virus to the cells and also stimulated the INF-beta secretions that help counteract viral infections among the cells of the mucosal membranes. Remember, if you should come down with COVID, one of the first things you should do is on about every 3 hours, flush your nasal passages. You can get saline solutions that then you can put colloidal silver or other elements in it that really kill off the virus in the mucosal membranes. That's where a lot of it's congregated, right up here, the whole mucosal. Just flush it out, clean it, and it can help. And the inhibition of the virus occurred more readily amongst the lung cells, illustrating the potential for ginger to inhibit infection of the lungs. So why not just take ginger each day? You can take a small piece, if you're watching right now, about that size, about 2 inches by an inch, and you juice it. And or you can get ginger concentrate, you can get ginger powder, but I prefer the fresh ginger. And so it makes a big difference. It has strong antibacterial and antiviral properties, and that's important. Now, next up, the University of New South Wales found that perfectionists are more likely to burn out. The people who can't stop trying to be perfect. Now, just think of, for example, think of all the men and women who in their teens are found to be very attractive. They have almost what we would call perfect features. You know, the one side of the face is symmetrical with the other side, and they just look right, right? And then all those people who starve themselves become bulimic or anorexic or go through various cosmetic procedures to try to get that artificial look. Well, now take a look at all the people who never acknowledge they're wrong. They hold on to an idea without ever asking themselves, have I tried to deconstruct this belief of mine to see if it's real or not? And have I listened to other people to see if they can find the imperfections in what I consider perfect ideology? Think of all the times you've had conversations with people of different ideologies, different religious beliefs, different cultural beliefs. How open were any of those individuals to acknowledge there is no perfection? There's only an effort towards being better. And in which case, then, you burn out. All the people I knew, mainly my professional friends, we didn't hang out together, we didn't go to dinner and movies together, but we exchanged information. And it was a wonderful relationship. But there were those amongst them who were perfectionists, and they tended not to have a sense of humor. They tended not to be interreflective. They tended to project everything from the outside world. In other words, what's wrong out there? Because it's not wrong in here. Regrettably, for all my friends, not a lot, who had this kind of perfectionist attitude, there was never a day of rest. There was working nonstop. One of them was the director of the Institute of Applied Biology. Without question, one of the most intelligent scientists, innovative and creative scientists. He was a genius. But he never took a day off. He never really listened to what anyone else had to say. In other words, when you stopped talking, then he would correct you and tell you what the right answer would be, whether it was or wasn't. And so people simply adapt, or what I call maladaptation, to the environment or people in it. And guess what happens when you maladapt? You become an extension of that energy. Have you ever been around negative people? Have you ever been around people who simply never see the limitation of their own beliefs? I have. And I developed a name for this. It's called maladaption syndrome, where there's something in the relationship you have that you feel you need, true or not, that is servicing you. It's harmonizing. Maybe harmonizing with a negative energy rather than a positive energy. We think of harmonizing as something positive, but you can have a negative harmony also. And so let's say this person just feels like they are a victim. No matter what the circumstances they're about to do, they know they're not going to come out of it right. Someone is going to victimize them. Whatever it is, never taking responsibility, but always being able to show the imperfections in everyone else or everything else. The chronic whiners, the chronic complainers. I recently had to tell someone the reason I no longer wanted to speak to them or wouldn't is because every single interface would have a negative outcome, because these people have a negative view of the world. Everything is scarce. Love is scarce. Honesty is scarce. Good people are scarce. You know, decent police officers are scarce or non-existent. Politicians are all corrupt. And that's simply not true. But on the other end, you can be Pollyannish. Everything is perfect. Everything's our utopia. And I might have to take a drug to get that utopia. Might have to take Prozac or Xanax or Fexer or lithium. Or I might take marijuana or magic mushrooms. Or I might go to a, you know, a yoga retreat or a cult ceremony and I'll find my perfection. No, you'll find an experience and you can maladapt to that until you become addicted to wanting that instead of what you have to face in the real world and the real issues. So here's the takeaway message. Life is not perfect. Even that most bucolic of scenes in one of the Impressionist paintings, the meadow, is not perfect. Go and sit under one of those trees for an hour and see how long it takes you to get bitten by a tick. Not perfect. But it doesn't mean that we have to seek perfection. Instead, seek happiness, seek joy, and seek improving, and seek challenging yourself from your most valued beliefs and see, are they still worth valuing, holding on to? And you'll find a lot of things we've grown out of. That was okay then, it's not okay now. And that's part of life. So that's what the University of New South Wales found. People with perfectionist traits are more susceptible to burnout, according to this just recently released study. They're more likely to have mood disorders, and they're also, the study highlighted some of the warning signs of burnout and suggests that people who tend to be perfectionists are more likely to veer into burnout due to their own unrelenting standards. And what is burnout? With the worries accompanying pandemic lockdowns, the pressure of inflation and other life stressors, many people are feeling at the end of their tether. For some people, the cumulative effects of these prolonged periods of stress can result in burnout. And unlike normal tiredness, the experts suggest burnout symptoms include constant exhaustion, emotional numbness, and confusion at home or in the workplace. And burnout is widespread among high achievers in the workplace. But it's becoming increasingly more prevalent in just personal lives. Just saying. All right, so you don't become one of those. And by the way, on this same topic, the University of California at Irvine School of Medicine found that stress speeds up vision loss by causing eye cells to die faster. Whoa. All right, just one more thing that we should be concerned about. That's the latest on health and healing. I welcome you into the new year, and we're going to take a break. Then I've got a lot of interesting things to share with you right after the break. And remember, every single Monday, if you sign up for the Gary Noll newsletter, you get a free copy summarizing all the material that I talk about on health and healing. All right? And if you sign up Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, which is not free, but very, very inexpensive, you get a tremendous amount of information that you can use. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. Welcome back, everyone. I'm Gary Noll. Again, I want to wish everyone a really special new year. We have a lot of new listeners and viewers, as each morning we film the health and nutrition segment, and you can see that on GaryNoll.com or PRN.live. But then I like to take calls, and we're completely redoing the PRN studio in New York. It'll look, when we're finished, it'll look like a major television studio, and all of our hosts will be able to use it. And it's just reaching a much bigger audience than what we had anticipated. So for those people who are just tuning in for the first time, for example, this morning I was on the Children's Health Defense television network for a half hour. Last night, the same network premiered to millions of people the multi-award-winning documentary, Brand New, and Science for Hire. So those people now have seen information that heretofore they wouldn't have been aware of. And we've just finished as of today. No, tomorrow, 10:30, with Dr. Pierre Corey, we will finish all of the individuals who have been attacked but who've been right, and who are mainstream, orthodox, pro-vaccine. They even took the COVID vaccine, but they found something wrong in the agenda, challenged it, as you're supposed to do in science and medicine, and they weren't attacking Fauci. They weren't attacking anyone. They were just simply saying that the different parts of the protocol, like not treating a person with available drugs, FDA-approved drugs, that you would normally treat a person if they had a lung infection, bacterial infection, if they had a viral infection, whatever it is, there were drugs to do that. And so they said, we've treated patients and we've got good results. So why are you telling us not to treat people at all? For that, they were considered heretics. We've just finished filming all of them that are public figures. And we're going to present this. That's a brand new documentary, but our newest documentary is finished. And I was just speaking with our producer this morning, our editor, Val. Valerie's been working with me for 35 years, about the same time as Roland Marconi. And by the way, I'm organizing all the people that worked on my documentary. It's well over 100, because it was just announced. In fact, Rodney, if you could get Val's clip from Friday, I'd like to play it again, because all of you didn't hear it. But I never mentioned these awards ever, but I'd like for you to know that people are paying attention to the documentaries. You don't see them on television. Well, last night you did with the Science for Hire. But normally no network would ever touch these. You don't see them on YouTube. They're banned. But you have to be diligent, and you can find them. They're on Rumble. They're on Odyssey. In fact, everything I have on YouTube, I've moved over to Odyssey, over 4,000 films, because it's only a matter of time. Like with Chris Hedges, they just completely banned all of Chris Hedges' stuff, wiped it away. Doesn't exist anymore. We'll have Chris talk about that on tomorrow's program. And if you didn't hear yesterday's program, with Max Blumenthal, I suggest you download it off the archives. Max is the publisher of The Gray Zone and one of the last of the really diligent investigative reporters who hasn't been compromised or canceled. He's been attacked, but he's still out there giving us the truth. Anyhow, all our films, and we're going back to the war on health and prescription for disaster and knocking on the devil's door, a deadly nuclear legacy and seeds of death and autism made in the USA, et cetera. We have just passed, 1,013 awards in official selection. To our knowledge, there's no filmmaker in history that's ever been able to even come close to that. I'll give you an idea. This is not to brag. It's just to show you that there's more documentarians now than ever before in history. So the competition stuff, you might have 10,000 people trying to get into a film festival. And you're lucky if you get in, but then you have to go through multiple stages before you actually win. And so when I just, this is one typical example. And I have three films this year in the Houston International Film Festival as an example. But when I was at the Kent International Film Festival, and I'm going from little tent to tent because they set up these little screening rooms, 20 people can sit on chairs and watch a film. You can watch these films, and then you get to see how good the competition is, and the competition is really good. I felt that other people deserved the award more than I did, and I told them that when we had dinner, a director's dinner. And so this one gentleman, he has produced three films. I've seen all three. They're all excellent documentaries. These are all documentaries. And we're talking. Guy from Germany, guy from Russia, who did a film on the Stalin's destruction of the Ukraine and starving him to death. A person from Japan, another person from Paraguay. And we're about 22 of us are talking. And so I just ask, how many awards have you all won? One guy had won one award. The most any of the others had was official acceptances into two film festivals. One, it was three film festivals. And they're very pleased about that, and they should be. And we've just passed 1,000. You'll never see that in Wikipedia. You'll never see it acknowledged. Because the one thing they never want to do is acknowledge people for succeeding when you represent their enemy, because you're willing to explore things and tell people the truth, and that's something they can't handle. So here's what I did in the last year, because I just want to show people that and what I'm going to be working on in the new year, because I believe that everyone should take some time, sit alone, no distractions, and ask yourself, why are you alive? What is the central meaning and purpose of your life? Now, that also has to be taken into account what your life energy is. If you're born a creative, assertive life energy, you're going to want to create. If you're born an adaptive, assertive, you're going to want to find solutions for problems. You'll be an engineer, an architect, a foreman. If you want to build a new world in some way or something unique, you'll be a dynamic assertive. If you want to be helping other people grow, like a counselor, psychologist, school teacher, professor, you'll be a dynamic supportive. So each one of these life energies also determines in no small measure what you ultimately end up doing. Now, whether you're living your own life or someone else's life is a separate issue. And there are people that no matter what they face, they'll look for the abundance of opportunity, the abundance of joy, the abundance of excitement, the abundance of creativity in that. Even if none exists, even if they weren't given anything, they'll find it, they'll create it. These people are exuberant, but they're also intimidating as hell to be around if you're an adaptive supportive, because these people can go from project to project. They want to open every door of life. They're extraordinarily curious. They're inquisitive like a puppy. And they also exude that innocence of thought. They tend to be selfless, and we all benefit from the doors they've opened. Virtually everything in your life, and I mean every single thing in your life, no exceptions, from your toothbrush to the pen you use, to the computer key, to the program that that computer offers you, to a light switch, to a light bulb, to a car, to the engine in that car, to the food you ate, someone else created it for you. You created none of it. You use it, and if you're the average American, you've forgotten to show appreciation for the people who actually did all this for you. In fact, if you're the average person today, with the woke generation being at least half of that or a little less, I'm writing a commentary on that today, telling people how to just tell the woke people to shut the hell up. They're a bunch of childish, immature, brat, narcissists, stupid people. And it's time that we said that and walked away from them and don't allow them to create laws to take their stupidity, their vileness, and their ignorance of life and codify it into law. In any case, I'm writing an article. I'll give that to you tomorrow. But you have to decide, what are you going to do? Now, you can be one of those people, and I know a lot of them. My God, I'm a magnet for dysfunction. I really am. Jesus. You can blame everything that's wrong in your life on everyone else. Never take the responsibility for being wrong about anything. And that's a lot of people I know. And I don't want anything to do with those people, nor does anyone else for that matter. So if you wonder why sometimes you're alone and you can't understand why, maybe you should stop being a victim. You know, there's a point to where you take the fork out of your hand that you've been stabbing in your chest, but never into your heart, so you can blame the pain that you feel on someone else. Clearly, it was the person that invented the fork, right? Not you. So we don't know how to transcend our environment when there's a crisis. We merely maladapt to it. If you doubt me on that, how about this? How about all the people that decided it was a good time, or the only time and a necessary time to travel, when the worst storm in American history was coming at you, where the report was in some states that it would be up to 60 degrees below zero with a wind factor that could be over 80 miles an hour winds, making it even colder and freezing you within minutes? And what if you're in an electric car? Not a good idea. And yet people chose to travel. And then millions get stuck in traffic. Millions of people are disadvantaged. But what's more important? Giving, you know, a reused sweater to someone as a gift, or your life? Think of that for a moment. Think how absolutely detached from awareness the people are. There's a time when you don't travel. When you know that the weather's coming, therefore you must know that there's going to be delays. And you know those delays are going to be compounded. So why travel? Because of some false obligation or routine or ritual? Like listening to Mass in Latin? What the hell's the purpose of that? I don't know. Why don't you ask the Pope? I don't think anybody knows. That we get so stupid at some point that there's no meaning to the rituals we go through. So why not stop? Why not ask yourself, can you actually not do something that's against your best interest? Like living in California or a lot of other places for a lot of the wrong reasons, even though at one time it was great. Not today. Can we hold on to the thoughts that we should have surrendered a long time ago? Today we need to. We need to realign with things that are actually real, honest, constructive, and that allow and encourage you to change what doesn't work, to eat the right foods, to think the right thoughts, to support the right projects. There's a woman who has saved over 900 dogs down at the border because the immigrants come there, they just leave their dogs. And they can't fend for themselves. They're domestic dogs. They'll starve to death, and that's what they do. She goes down there and gets them and puts them in a non-kill. And I support that. I'm going to send them a check. I don't send checks out to any place that just goes to administrative fees, which are most of these fraudulent charities, or doesn't get good results. But when someone's doing good, you support that, if you can, to the degree that you can. Because you look at those poor dogs, they're there for pure love. In fact, while I'm mentioning that, I've got a dog that I haven't seen. I got a picture of him. Now you can see a picture by going to GaryNall.com and PRN.live. This is a dog that John Q, who lives down at the villa, was taking his dog for a walk. And here was this hiding in the freezing cold, this poor little beautiful female dog, little and gentle, but skinny as can be, hadn't eaten because it doesn't know how to hunt. Remember that. You know, when you're born feral, you'll find a way to survive if you can. If you're born domestic and you're put into a feral environment, you'll die. And so he took it in, and I got its special food sent down, and it's got its weight back up, just as gentle as can be, loving as can be. So if you'd like to have that wonderful creature who will love you forever, give Luann Panisi a call, because she's going to try to find a home for it. We found a home for a pup. Again, one day later, there's another dog that's found that was abandoned. And again, it's shivering and cold in the middle of that cold streak. And it's a wonder it didn't freeze to death. But now we found a home up in Ohio. So give Luann a call and take a look at the picture. So let's be one of those people that say, yeah, I could live with a companion like that. All right. So Luann's number is 903-881-7008. 903-881-7008. And that's just within 2 days. Now, because I'm loaded up here with animals, I don't have any more room. But for those of you who want something that'll just love you, that's gentle, this is a good call you can make. All right? And then we'll see, Luann will see that it gets to you. Now, let me just tell you what we've done, and I do this once a year, only once a year, because people say, okay, well, what do you do, Gary? Well, here are some of the things in the last 12 months that have been achieved. And these are things that I don't have to work on again. Now, I've got a whole new list of things I'm going to be doing. The brand new book, Rejuvenate with Juicing, done, came out a week ago. Finished the documentary, Science for Hire, which is a powerful documentary that exposes all the corruption within science historically, right up till today. Also, completed 2 anti-aging clinical studies. The results were done yesterday. I should get the final results today, and I'll share those with you tomorrow, and it'll go out for peer review publication. And I can just tell you from looking at the first results they sent me, but they weren't all of them, we saved people's lives. I mean, my goodness. I don't know what the DNA test is going to take. The university is supposed to get a hold of us later in the week because they did a very it took them 3 months to analyze all the results. This is a separate blood test we had everyone take that determines how old are you biologically. In other words, let's say you're 60 years old chronologically. What's your biological age? Because that's where you live and die. And I believe that we will show we reverse people's biological age. I certainly saw it in the test results in the blood. I saw a PSA over 100 go to zero. I mean, we're looking at phenomenal changes. And I'm going to probably do one more because of that. And because a lot of athletes didn't have races due, because for the last 2.5 years, races were canceled. Finally, Florida started back. And so 3 weeks ago, and it's the first state championship. I set a new 2-mile record and won a gold in the 3,000 meter and came within a couple seconds of setting that record. We did 4 webinars that were very successful. We have a new webinar. And over the weekend, we can thank Phil, our webmaster, who got us some more space on the bandwidth. because we were full. And this is going to really be important. I'm filming someone tomorrow, and we just finished filming someone Friday that are going into it. So we're up to 8 hours. I mean, from noon to eight. We're going to take a break after every presenter, and then we're going to take a half-hour break halfway through. People can have some food, et cetera. But you're never going to get all this information because it's going to tell you what to do if you are concerned about, long COVID, whether you're vaccinated or not, because we have someone on there, MD, PhD, who reversed her long COVID, and she was near death in a hospital. Mind you, she's a double board certified physician and scientist, and she came within hours of death. She demanded to be released from the hospital, went back to her medical clinic, and started doing everything she knew, and it worked. So she's going to give us her formula. Rich and I have spent over a week going through all of the different protocols from all these different scientific groups, medical doctors, and getting rid of all redundancy so that you have everything that you should do if you choose to. It's not meant to diagnose or cure any disease. It's meant to help you if you're now having second thoughts about the safety of the vaccine. I don't tell people to vaccinate or not. I say simply honor your freedom of choice by doing your homework. And unfortunately, nobody did. And as a result, we're seeing an enormous surge. We'll call them clots, but there's no real word for it at the moment. But you'll see them. I mean, morticians are finding them all over the place in people's bodies who've died. And yet the government will not acknowledge this, nor will the government acknowledge that there's anywhere from 10 to 40% excess death. More people have died after the vaccines than died of COVID. Their figures, not mine. So wouldn't you think at this point, whereas upwards of 90% of the people going to hospital and dying have had all their vaccines, well, at what point do you stop and ask yourself, are these vaccines making me more likely to develop COVID? The answer is yes. To be hospitalized, yes. And to die, yes. What about that football player that had a heart attack, massive heart attack yesterday? Ideal health, no risk factors, no heart disease, high blood pressure, nothing. Boom, down it goes. And the whole world suddenly knows about it. But what about all the hundreds of other top athletes who are dropping dead? That's never happened before, ever. And yet, Fritz Perl said it best, a fear of knowing is a fear of doing. We're not paying attention to that. Well, we're going to play a clip in a moment to show you how much they're trying to avoid this, because then if they knew this was possible and all these people have died, we're talking about millions of people dying who didn't have to, then they could be sued for wrongful death. That's why you're going to get nothing but denials. Also, I want to thank the nearly 4,000 people from this audience who drove clear up to Kingston, New York, to join Gerald Salante, myself, Judge Napolitano, Ritter, in leading an Occupy Peace protest. That was a big day. Also, if you want to come to this weekend, Sunday's webinar, because even if you don't have any problems yourself, and we hope you don't, we believe that, and you'll hear this from the experts, mind you, these are all pro-vaccine, pro-orthodox doctors, that we're going to see a huge jump in deaths and injuries because of the delayed reactions that they're now finding. So now's the time to see what can I do to neutralize and eliminate the potential for a lot of this damage and death. How important is that? I think it's very important. Very important. By the way, none of these protocols are mine. I'm giving you their protocols. But I'll be there also to answer questions, as well as Lou Panisi, who's gathering the names of doctors who are reviewing the protocols to see will they use these. Glad to help you as well. published 57 articles on investigative reports and commentaries in the last year. That's over one per week. That's a lot. They're all on GaryNall.com if you missed them. Created three new products, began new research and updating of the Complete Encyclopedia of Natural Healing, mainly for clinicians and really interested lay people. I counseled 1,456 people, never charged them a penny. I rebuilt, or we are in the process of rebuilding, and we spent lots of money and time to rebuild PRN, hired new staff. I won four lawsuits, have five more that I'm suing people, and I'll get that. Built an organic horticulture project with a friend. His name is Angelo. And got not only that horticulture project built, but then a group of four people in homesteading launched their projects from gourmet breads to sugar-free and vegan organic fudge and every kind of vegetable and fruit selling at the farmer's market. And it was tremendously successful. The people at the farmer's market loved it. And now these people have regular customers. And that was just on a small scale. Now it's going to go to another city, which is larger close by. Launched the international community. Been interviewing people. Haven't found anyone to qualify yet, but that's still open. Began publishing along with John LaBelle, the Gary Knoll newsletter. Thousands of people have signed up, and we're giving a lot of good insights. Edited 150 videos that are up on Rumble, free. Also packed the Huntington Arts Cinema with the sold-out premiere of Anti-Aging Challenge. Now we'll be going back with a new film on Manufacturing Madness as soon as Val tells me it's ready. And I took four homeless people into my home and helped them get back their life. And now, as the last one is left, next week, another homeless person is coming. And I'm asking her, will she allow her story from the time she arrives to be filmed? A, she's well known. She's a very famous person in her field. B, I think it's important for other people who are facing homelessness for different reasons and health issues because of that to be able to say, what can we do to prevent this? So if she gives permission, then you'll see this in segments as it's done in real time. So that's some of the things I've achieved in the last year. I'll only mention this once, as I do at the end of each year. And now we're going to go over to Neil Oliver. Now, you know what we're going to do? Rodney, let's start the new year with Claire Daly. It's only a minute long, but she is one of the most courageous, fearless fighters for freedom on the planet. And she takes on all of the enemies of the state. She's in the European Union, which she calls a completely corrupt organization. And she goes after everyone. Good for her. Here's Claire Daly.
The worst is yet to come. So said the IMF in October. Europe's economies are being decimated by sanctions. Millions of Europeans are going to have to decide between heating and eating this winter. People in Poland are burning rubbish to keep warm, and the lights are winking out in German industry. The Russians are laughing at us, the Americans are laughing at us, and I wouldn't blame them, because when Europe decided to go to war, it ended up by cutting its own throat. And then we have the Inflation Reduction Act, a coup de grace from the US to a Europe that it knows is bleeding. So much for our like-minded partners. They're doing what they always do, putting America first. That's the business they're in. But what is the response of the EU? Nothing. We're too busy shooting ourselves in both feet, failing to try and secure an end to the war, while the US charges us four times the price for energy, having made us dependent. In a modern war, the only winner is global capital. Ordinary people always lose. We should remember that the next time we talk about peace being treason.
And you'll hear more from her. Now we're going to take you on a little different tour Let's see, we have a choice here. Let's go to Katie Hopkins talking about what we are not allowed to talk about, and no one is talking about, but we'll talk about it because it's real, and it can adversely affect you. It can kill you, and yet no government wants to take it on. The scientific community doesn't want to look there. The medical community doesn't want to look there because they're complicit. And this is the all of the deaths that are occurring. Now, I also have a clip from Ed Dowd, and we'll try to get to that in a moment, but she's giving us the actual statistics, and this is just for Great Britain, and yet no one will touch this subject, because if they do, then they have to ask, when you die of something. What does the autopsy show? And what's the only thing that's different in this person's life? Oh, it was the vaccines. You're not allowed to say that. She says it, or she gives us the insights. We'll go now to her comments on all these unusual deaths.
Excess deaths in the UK right now are higher than they were at any time during COVID. So if you remember during COVID, the daily briefings, the here's the number of deaths, here's the number of hospitalizations, here's this, here's that, the number of excess deaths right now is higher than at that time when we had daily briefings and daily death counts and people petrified into their own homes and people glued to the TV screens to see just how bad things were in their area and wondering what they could do about it and wanting to get more information about it. Currently, the situation is worse than at any of that time, and yet absolutely nothing at all is being said. And the thing that really troubles me from a behind the kind of screens media side of this is that it's almost as if the story is actively being hidden as opposed to not just not being talked about. So the actual numbers are about 1,500 excess deaths a week. The last figure for the last week was 1,646 excess deaths. So that's deaths over the average. And consistently for the last few months, the excess death figure has been higher than at any time for the last 5 years. So on a comparative scale, over the last 5 years, excess deaths are now way higher than they ever were. And this isn't just a UK problem. This is being seen in Australia, where I think they're running at around 18% higher than is average or usual. And there's some very interesting other things about these excess deaths. One way that the media is trying to kind of divide them up is to talk about different groups of excess deaths. So you're going to hear the figure 300 to 500 excess deaths a week. That's just referring to A&E, the state of the NHS, and the fact that people that go to A&E aren't being dealt with quick enough, aren't being seen, can't get to a bed, can't get the treatment they need. So not to disregard the 300 to 500 figure, but that is actually, you could say subterfuge, you could say that is actually a distraction. The real number of excess deaths that are unexplained in many ways each week 1,600 in the last week that was measured that we have on record. And that's been measured by three different ways. So it's not just like one person's metric that we're talking about here. The other really strange thing about these figures that no one is talking about or people are actively not talking about is that a third more individuals in this excess death category are dying in their own homes. So I suppose when you think about that, if you know you're sick or you know you're ill, possibly you're in A&E, or if you know you're sick or ill, you're in hospital, or if you're elderly and frail and probably not doing too well, maybe you're in a care home, or maybe you're even in hospice. Those would be different kind of environments where you might be expected to die if you weren't doing so well. A third of these excess deaths are happening to people who are just pottering around their own homes as if they didn't know they had anything wrong with them at all. And that should strike most ordinary people as being quite odd. There's a particular category as well where excess deaths are particularly high, and that's in men aged around 50 to 64. And it seems to correlate strongly with heart problems. And that group was being severely affected by these excess deaths. And just so you know, you don't separate excess deaths as some sort of thing over there or some sort of, you know, I don't know, something that's separate from life. Excess deaths mean people are just dying in their own homes that didn't necessarily realise they were unwell. Otherwise, they would have presented themselves to a hospital or an A&E or a doctor's surgery or would be in a hospice or a care home. So that's particularly odd. The other thing that's really odd when you think about it, if you're willing to, and this really is a question of who's willing to think about this, let alone talk about it, which won't make me terribly popular in the usual circles, is that there is a communications void. And this goes back to my earlier point that it's not just that this isn't being talked about. It's not just this isn't actively being distracted from, which I'd argue people talking about 300 excess deaths in A&E, that's a distraction from this main point, because 1,646 is clearly a larger number. We are talking about over 200 people dying a day that probably shouldn't be, just in the UK alone. But it's that there is a communications void, and I can almost feel it from my media days. There's a sucking out of the oceans, like before a tsunami, except the tsunami of information will never come. It is actively being suppressed, and I can feel it. Remember those daily briefings. Remember how they pulled in Chris Whitty, because people liked that he seemed kind of odd. They liked that he looked like he'd never had sex in his life and he never blinked and he was a very odd scientist. And that really held people's attention. Next slide, please. And there was another guy. Do you remember him? Patrick Vallance. They used him a lot because he had a different way of being. He talked about football and he was like kind of a scientist, but yet kind of cool. They used him. They had these two different approaches for two different audiences to get their messaging across. A daily briefing at number 10 for deaths that were at a rate that is lower than now, when no one is prepared to talk about it at all. In fact, information is being actively suppressed. And you can say, well, so what, Katie? Well, so what? A lot of our fellow countrymen are dying and no one wants to talk about it. And these are numbers that are quite clearly, it doesn't matter if it's me saying it, go find someone else or go look it up for yourself. You will find the numbers without my commentary. The other thing that's very concerning, whether you give a shit about 200 people plus dying a day that shouldn't be or not, is the fact that if you were to assert that this was due to lockdown, it's that almost as if lockdown is a thing, like a pen, lockdown. And people say, well, it's possibly due to lockdown, as if it was to blame on this pen, and therefore this pen, well, there's nothing more to be said. It's quite possibly lockdown was to blame. But of course, lockdown wasn't this inanimate object, was it? Lockdown was a decision-making moment by leaders of this country. It was enabled and pushed by the science. Celebrities and the media worked together to push lockdown. You can think of individuals, I am sure, Piers Morgan, who actively said that people who refused to be vaccinated should be locked down and never let out again. Lockdown wasn't an inanimate object. Lockdown was a group of human beings who foisted their desires onto another group of people, for many of whom, including myself, that was done unwillingly, to the point where most of us, or many of us, rejected all ideas about lockdown, to the point of being deported from entire countries. Lockdown, as people keep saying, well, maybe, perhaps it's due to lockdown. But it wasn't lockdown. It was the people that made...
I'm sure in the new year you're going to find a lot of new studies showing the huge jump in unexplained deaths. And the one thing she said that we haven't thought about, most people who have heart conditions or any serious life-threatening condition are already under medical care. They're being treated. It's very unusual for people to be at home thinking they're completely healthy and then just drop dead. So, and this is why we have to start demanding autopsies on people who do not have an underlying health morbidity who drop dead. And yet that was discouraged at the beginning. But now the morticians are the ones who are finding they can't embalm the bodies as they used to, because there are these unusual, never-before-seen clots in their whole veins. Some people have had these removed. One person had a 2-foot clot removed and survived. But how many others didn't know that they had the clots forming? That's why I say we have to start getting ahead of this. We're out of time for WBAI. We say goodbye to them, and we're going to continue the top of the hour on our, I think it's important that we listen to at least 5 minutes of Neil Oliver with a New Year message. Is this how we really want to live? Now to Neil Oliver.
Recent years, and I see, what do I see? More than anything else, there's been a transformation of science and reason based on open-mindedness and free thinking into inflexible dogma. And I find that deeply troubling. And I feel that this turn, this beginning of a new year, it's yet another inducement, another moment when we ought to pause and think, is this really how we want to be? And isn't there a better way of doing things? Aren't there better ways of doing things? It feels to me as though a dominant movement within the scientific community, so it's not science in its entirety, because those who live truly the scientific way are open-minded at all times and sceptical and aware that the next great idea could come from the most unexpected source. Open to the idea that all ideas are up for challenge all the time, that there's always more to learn and more to know. So I'm not saying this about the world of those who follow the scientific method, but within science, there's a movement within that world has become dominant, and it feels as though its practitioners have finally lost patience with us, the general population, and that rather than being, as they're supposed to be, open to discussion, and bearing in mind that there's always more to know and that we don't know where the next inspiration will come from, it feels like domineering entities have decided to close the book on debate and dissent, and instead they just want to lay down the law. And so what I say, my message for the new year, at this turn of the new year, is that it's a good time to think about all of this, and what we need is a renaissance. I say what we need is a renaissance. Now, that's a familiar word for most people. A lot of people tie it to Italy. A lot of people put it around maybe from 1400, 1500, 1600, that kind of, you know, spanning across those centuries. But really, if you look into it at all, the last Renaissance probably, or at least perhaps, began as early as the time of Charlemagne, right back in the 8th and 9th centuries AD. Because by the time of Charlemagne, and in the world of Charlemagne, although not exclusively, but in his world, for example, there was renewed interest in the classical world. The world of Charlemagne was aware of Rome and aware of classical Greece. And in his time, there was reading of and translation of ancient texts. You know, people were looking back at the wisdom that had been acquired by the Greek philosophers and others. And once inspired, once that little spark had been struck, once that little flame had been kindled, then that desire for knowledge and better understanding, based on what had been already understood and known in the past, it continued for centuries. Having come into being in the 800s and the 900s, it just kept on coming. And by the 12th century, which is early, really, for most people when thinking about the advent of the Renaissance, but already by the 12th century, that mood to look back in order to better look forward was well entrenched, and it was all about translating and reading of Greek philosophy and Greek science, well, if you can call Greek approaches to understanding the world science. The Crusades were critical at this time, because the Crusades brought Europeans into contact with the Middle East, into those, really, to be honest, those far more advanced civilizations at that time. you know, where Islamic scholars had been hard at it, translating and rediscovering the work of the ancient Greeks and others. And the Crusaders, after they spent time out in that part of the world, they came back to Europe with, amongst other things, some of that knowledge, having been reawoken to that ancient wisdom. And the process was ongoing, it was constant. The fall of Byzantium, when Constantinople fell to the Seljuk Turks in 1453, a lot of Christian thinkers there, Christian thinkers in the East, fled into the West for their lives. And also for freedoms of all sorts. And they brought that ancient wisdom with them as well. That was another exodus from the East into the West. And then the Black Death made a huge impact, and according to some writers, you know, was part of setting the stage for that main Renaissance that everybody's familiar with. Because so many prominent officials, prominent people died along with everybody else, that there was enormous social and political upheaval at all levels, you know, from the grassroots right up to the top. The plague was not a respecter of any part of the demographic. And so there were hitherto unexpected opportunities created. An edifice of dominant people was cracked and fractured and fell away, and it allowed different green shoots to come through, and it created opportunities. You know, the Medici family in Florence.
Just imagine changing the concept of the Black Death and what came after it, the Renaissance, with COVID. What has come from COVID is the control over our lives, or the effort to control our lives with the World Economic Forum. And just imagine the pushback, where people now want to be truly enlightened, truly free, to live a life of meaning and purpose, and joy and happiness, with respect and honoring each other, irrespective of a person's cultural or religious differences and ethnic differences. That is what we need today. We need a new way of thinking, not just new knowledge. And I believe that the crisis we've been in will be a breakdown of our existing belief system, where we can no longer trust it, and then a breakthrough to create new systems. And it won't be all at once, and it won't be one big failed transformation. It'll be piece by piece. The individual sees something is not working in their own life, they change it, and now their life works. Where they had disease, they now have health. Where they had doubt and insecurity and fear, now they have optimism and hope. That's what we need going into this new year. Thank you all for listening, and have a nice day.